from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Hit and Run Sundays from 9 a.m. till noon.
Here comes the 1-1 from Wesneski to Gallo. He hits a high fly ball deep right field. This is trouble. This is going to be a long home run. Joey Gallo, a towering tape measure home run. And Minnesota leads 4-0. Here's the 2-2. Hit in the air, deep left center. This ball is going to leave the yard. Correa with a solo home run. And it is now 8-1 Minnesota. And now the 3-2 with the runners going. Swinging a drive toward right. Pretty well hit. Back goes Castro. Makes the catch. Joey Gallo is the right fielder. It was Joey who made that catch. And this ball game is over, as the Cubs do not score in the ninth inning. The Twins win.
So you want to go? A bunch of us win.
Love it.
Like, that ball just went out of the park.
Yes, it did. Luis Robert Jr. hammers a 2-strike pitch for the first run today.
When Luis Robert gets a strike and he stays in the strike zone, he knows it right away. This ball was smashed.
In the air, over first, base hit for Robert. Here comes Moncada, and the White Sox have retaken the lead.
Great. Home fans want every pitch called a strike.
2-1, hit in the air, center field. Robert charging, Robert sliding, and he makes the catch for a White Sox victory over Houston.
Hit and Run Sundays from 9 a.m. till noon.
Good morning. Happy Mother's Day. I am not Matt Spiegel. It's Gabe Ramirez. It's Marshall Harris. Here hanging out, man. We're going to be filling in, leading you right into Cubs baseball. You know, I heard that the highlight of Luis Robert, and I was watching it live. I was at a bar, I think I was. Actually, I don't remember. It's been a long weekend. But I'm sitting there, and I just thought to myself, you know, he's already been on this tear for like the last week. But that play, he just, you know, when outfielders make the sliding catch look so effortless, you marvel in the moment. And then you're watching him, and you're just like, then he's running, like, you know, you make the catch and he's running in. He gunned it to the infield. It was the last out of the obviously the game. But as he's running in, he got like the Michael Jordan cross little earring coming down from the side.
Listen, the thing about Swaggy. Luis Robert Jr. is it's never been a doubt of whether he has the talent or not.
True.
It's just the consistency that I'm looking for. And even when the Sox were terrible, I'm not saying they're great now, but like,
sure,
even when they were losing like seemingly every night, losing 10 in a row, whatever, he was making plays in center field. He was saving home runs. He was making diving catches. He was making catches on the run. So, like, every time I see it, it's like, yeah, that man can play. Like, that's a good piece. You want to be strong defensively up the middle. It doesn't get stronger than that.
I remember watching the 2005 White Sox and seeing Aaron Rowan play center field, and he made it look, again, it was just like, it was effortless. That's how he made it look. And I remember Hawk always saying that Aaron Rowan never win a gold glove, because Torrey Hunter will have bad reads on the ball and then go dive and make it look spectacular.
And it'll make it look good. And when so it didn't need to look as spectacular as it looked.
And so it's like, Torrey Hunter's always going to look like he's great because he's making these bad reads and then diving plays to make up for it. Where Aaron Rowan is always making the right read, always under the ball in those kind of situations. And I feel like Luis Robert, obviously, you know, we know how well he can play center field. But the way, sometimes the way he makes it look is that it's just too easy. You know, the way he gets on the ball, he's so fast. He gets underneath it, making the right reads, making the right plays. That last out that we were just talking about, sliding catch, just making it look good. And it is, man, I got to be honest, it's fun to watch. You just, when you see games like yesterday where the White Sox pull off the victory 3-1, and you say to yourself, like, this looked like a game that is something that they can duplicate often.
And well, yeah.
It's just unfortunate that they can't.
Well, they can if Dylan Cease is on the mound pitching like his old self. Like,
every
what does he
day.
Look like before yesterday? Yeah. He looked not like a Cy Young award contender.
Yeah, but it's a lot of pressure. I'm gonna be the Sox apologist
okay,
here.
That's
stop. A lot of pressure to put on a guy that every single time you go out for multiple years, you just need to be a dog on the bump. You're gonna have some games like that, you know?
Listen,
he pitched six
shutout innings, and if you give a team six shutout innings, you should win that game every time.
True.
Unless you're going up against another bona fide Cy Young Award contending ace.
True.
And he has not looked like that guy in half the starts he's made this season. That's been a problem. And they were never going to go anywhere if Dylan Cease wasn't doing his thing.
Yeah.
If he wasn't picking up from where he was last year into this season, they were never going anywhere. But the beautiful thing for me is I don't look at the win-loss record. I just look at the games back. They're 8.5 games back, which seems like a lot, right? But I'm like, are the Twins that good?
No. Like, I mean, they are, but
they
no.
are. They have talent.
Yeah.
But, like, do they have that much more talent than the White Sox?
They have that much more pitching. And that's the issue right there for the Twins. And the Cubs are seeing it firsthand. After their game yesterday, that shellacking 11-1, Wisniewski, we were talking about it a second ago. You know, when you're watching that game, it's just, and this goes back to Cease, right? Where we've seen Cease over the course of the last couple of seasons not necessarily be able to hit his marks consistently. And then once he figured that out and was able to, that's when he became a dominant pitcher. And I feel like that's where Wisniewski's at. Where yesterday, a lot of those home runs were just, you know, sliders that missed.
Well, that's a problem in the major leagues.
Yeah. Big problem, Marshall.
Because like if you miss with a fastball, you might get away with it.
Yeah.
But if you miss up with a slider.
And he missed a couple of times. And those where you're like, you know, it's supposed to be a sweeping one, you know. Maybe like, you know, low inside, and then all of a sudden it hits the outer corner to a lefty and they're just able to smack it. And it was a tough game from yesterday. And then the defense didn't help out at all, you know, either in those situations too. But what did you think about the series this weekend, Cubs, Twins, and what you saw just in general?
I just love the fact that we're going into a Sunday and it's like, okay, it's a rubber game. They can still win the series. Every time I watch a series, like especially three game series,
yeah,
it's like, can you just win the series? Just win the series. Just win the series. And every time you wake up on the third day of a series and there's a chance to win the series, it's already a better series than if you had lost the first two, which has happened way too often for the White Sox, not so much for the Cubs.
Yeah.
But I think the Cubs are in a good spot. This is a very difficult road trip. I don't think it's like an impossible road trip. It's a 9-gamer in, I think, over 10 days. When you're talking about playing the Twins, who are leading their division, and the two teams that were in the World Series last year,
yeah,
that is what to me is a daunting task. Now, I know those two teams maybe haven't played as well now as they did last October, but still, like, if you can come away with this 5-4 or even 4-5, I'm good with that.
You're not necessarily mad about that. A game three rubber match that Marshall Harris is talking about happening today. First pitch, 1:10 p.m. We got the pregame and the game, obviously, here on 670 The Score. Why don't you guys check that out? Marcus Stroman's on the bump today.
I like that.
I think they're going to win today. I think they actually are going to take that series. And that is a selfish Sox fan saying that.
If I told you Marcus Stroman, right, was going to be, you know, the second or third best pitcher on a staff, but be looking good, you would be like, oh, the Cubs are winning things.
No, I would say that's where he belongs. That's what I would say about Marcus Stroman. Marcus Stroman should not be your top of the line ace, right? And he was
Do you think he believes that? Do you think he believes that?
No pitcher in Major League Baseball believes that they're not the ace or that they shouldn't get the ball, you know, to kick off the season in those situations. But Stroman, I mean, he's just been pitching well. I mean, it's 2.28 ERA. I mean, just absolutely lights out. And today, going up against Louis Varlin, the guy that, you know, struggled his last couple outings. So I think he's going to be hyped up to take the series lead. And then, you know, Minnesota is a nice park to pitch in. So I know he's going to be feeling good about that. And like you mentioned, the Cubs are, I mean, listen, they got embarrassed yesterday, 11-1. So they're going to want to bounce back in that situation and really, you know, prove a point and then take their butts over to Houston and then try to, you know, be the second Chicago team to win a series against the Astros.
That is not a place that you want to be out here pitching.
That's Houston? No.
That's like a little league park.
My one of my favorite memories. One of my really good friends, shout out Jesse. He's a Houston Astros fan. Born and raised in Houston. So 2 years ago, he's like, dude, I'm going to Houston. I'm gonna catch the White Sox series. Go visit my mom. You want to come with me? I was like, absolutely. I want to go down there and catch these games. So I go down. I got my White Sox hat on and I have a pin put into my cap, and it's a 2005 World Series pin. With the Houston Astros on, you know me, Marshall, so you know that's something that I most certainly would do.
Yeah, that is something you would do.
So yeah. I have the pin on, and the Sox suck in this, in this year, and I'm like, whatever. So everybody's like, you guys suck, and we're like right in the front, third baseline, and I stand up in between innings.
What are you doing?
And I'm like, because they're all heckling me, and then my friend, he's like a damn near a comedian. He's like, guys, I'm sorry for my friend here, man. You know, he's from Chicago. I had to show him, what a World Series team. He forgot. And I stand up and I'm like, guys, man, this is a beautiful museum. Did you know this is the place where the White Sox won the 2005 World Series? This is beautiful, man. This is amazing.
You're over the top.
This is wild.
You're lucky you're dealing with a docile Houston Astros fan base. Because some places, somebody hit you in the face.
They all laughed. It was fun. But definitely one of my favorite stories in visiting a different ballpark. I'm Gabe Ramirez. He's Marshall Harris from CBS2, man. Check him out on TV. He's working tonight.
Yeah,
I'll be there. He's always messaging me about how many jobs I have. And you are my friend.
And congratulations, by the way.
What?
You over here, you got the fire looking good.
Oh.
You got the fire looking good.
Hey, man. That's a whole other conversation. I'm glad that they won yesterday. They should have won by more, but I'm glad that they won yesterday.
Man. Dubs, points is points.
True. And they did get a three yesterday against St. Louis City SC.
Effect, man.
It really is. Yeah. Like they've advanced in the U.S. Open, the Lamar Hunt.
Yeah.
The U.S. Open, they're winning actual MLS games now. You know, they're not in 14th place anymore and have a 15-team league.
We are losing listeners as we continue to talk about.
Listen, I was just giving Gabe his props.
And I appreciate that.
He's in the, but look, he might be at every Fire game, but he's in the White Sox hoodie right now.
Facts.
Representing.
You know what? I felt, to me doing this, because I know, listen, Matt Spiegel is one of our brilliant baseball minds here at 670 The Score. And there's no way that even our two minds together can match his when it comes to this. So I felt like I needed to be in the zone. So this was intentional. I dug in my closet to go find the White Sox.
I should have worn my White Sox gear too. Then
see,
I didn't know we were doing that. I thought because we were the Cub Station, we weren't allowed to do that. I don't know.
We give unbiased opinions here. On
both
teams.
One of us gives unbiased opinions.
Don't let Sean start because Sean is the one that eggs me on, and that's what it is. I like the Cubs.
I like the Cubs too.
If one thing Sean can tell you is that I have been a big fan of this pitching staff since last year.
Since last year,
I was like, when everybody was like, I'm out on the Cubs, I'm like, dude, your pitching staff is awesome. I said, Rossi got these guys playing extremely well, and these young guns, I was like, this team is fun to watch. And so I've always been there. But then Sean will come in and be like, but has Dylan Cease been fun to watch for the last? You know what I mean? Like, he'll throw in some shade like that.
Yeah, that's unnecessary, Sean.
And it's unnecessary.
He's making things up, man. Half the time, I'm just like, you know, it was really fun, the Chicago White Sox.
Yeah, see?
So I feel like the dynamic here between Cubs fans and White Sox fans is very interesting to me.
Okay.
Like, I'm a lifelong White Sox fan growing up in Birmingham, Alabama, going to Barons games with my dad.
That's awesome.
But, like, I love the Cubs, too, because I grew up and they were on TV every single day.
Yeah.
So, I watched the leadoff, man. I got WGN.
That's what Jerry Reinsdorf said.
Yeah.
That's why there's Cubs fans everywhere, because of the Superstation.
Absolutely. And that was me, like, I would watch them in the afternoon and I'd watch the Braves at night on TBS.
Yeah.
So from one Superstation to another, right? And I just didn't, when I got here, it seems like there's this tension between the Sox fans and the Cubs fans. And I'm like, why? Why? They don't play each other.
It's such an unnecessary tension, but I think it's something that is fueled by the idiots, like the baseball idiots, right? There's the purists that just love baseball,
right?
And they love the fact that there are two teams here in this wonderful city that we get to see on any given day during the summer. But then there's those schmucks that want to be like, oh, I like the Cubs, like Sean, be like, oh my God. That's a good impersonation of Sean Sears, by the way.
I'll take it.
Very clear. And then there's the other, like the Sox fans. I want to be very clear. There's a bunch of, belligerents that are over there as well. that are like, the Cubs. And it's like, dude, just chill. It's not that serious. We're not getting paid by either of these teams.
Yeah, stay in your lane. Root for who you root for. Like, there's no need for all the shade. Let's leave that to the NBA because it's my favorite place to get all the drama.
Hey, and we might, be chatting about a little NBA here and there. But we are going to take a break, guys. I want to open up the phone lines, 312-644-6767. I'm usually working at night unless I'm filling in somewhere. So I would love to hear some of your baseball minds because I know you are the one that is listening right now. What did you think about these last couple of games? If you are a Cubs fan against the Minnesota Twins in this road trip, and then if you're a Sox fan as well, how impressed are you with Dylan Cease, Luis Robert, and what direction do you feel like these White Sox are going to be in? We're taking your thoughts on Cubs and Sox right here on 670 The Score, 312-644-6767. It's Gabriel.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
It's Marshall Harris. It's Hit and Run right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Hit and Run, Sundays from 9 a.m. till noon.
White Sox ace tonight, Dylan Cease,
who had a tremendous start on opening day against the Astros.
Good start for Dylan Cease. Well, the old saying, location, and a couple more times, three times to be exact, location, location, location.
1-2, got him on the corner, strike three, just nipped the edge. Second strikeout for Cease. There's a swing and miss, strike three, one away. Swing and a miss, strike three, breaking ball from Cease. Strikeout number four. 3-2, right on the corner, painted him. How about the catch by Zavala there too, helped him a little bit.
Perfect pitch, perfect catch, perfect way to take care of Alvarez.
Dylan Cease with a gem yesterday. White Sox win 3-1 versus the Houston Astros. Cease going six, giving up just four hits, two walks, five strikeouts. And every Sox pitcher that touched the bump yesterday got themselves a strikeout. Reynaldo Lopez going two-thirds of an inning, giving up the earned run. He got a K. Joe Kelly gets the win, going an inning in the third. Two strikeouts, had one hit, and then Kendall Graveman came in when everybody was nervous the very end. The ninth, one hit, one strikeout as well. The damning thing about the game yesterday, because it should have been probably the gap should have been a little bit bigger, Marshall. Where the White Sox had 13 hits yesterday.
I don't care.
Oh, you don't care.
Listen, man.
You're like pitchers that don't care about victories. Just get the victory.
Yo, just the way the Sox had been playing, have been playing, are playing. When you can take a dub, and the other team scores one run, you just take it and run. Like that's. You got to set a tone somehow, some way, right?
But you're playing against a team that is a game over 500.
Okay, and where are you?
Hold on, I'm talking about when you're asking because where I felt like you were going with that was.
He took that one personally.
You see what he, See what he does, Sean Sears? You see what he does?
Sean, I'm not going to let you instigate in this. I can instigate myself. We don't need two instigators in this.
You've never hung out with Marshall and I. This is what we do.
This is literally what we do.
What I'll say is, I know you want to focus on the fact that they were 3-for-10 with runners in scoring position.
Yes, and 13 hits. You're wasting Tim Anderson going 3-for-4. Andrew Benintendi going 2-for-3 at the top of the lineup. Like these are you know, and Yo-Yo coming back going 3-for-4. Like these are the things you're wasting in these moments.
Okay, you're saying you're wasting, but just get these guys to start hitting, and then it will come together. Andrew Vaughn had a 0-for-4, 2-strikeout night. That's why they were, you know, in the situation they were in. But 3-for-10, that's still 300 with runners in score position. I think you got to start looking at this in an overall sense of, hey, this is better than what we've been doing. As opposed to, hey, why aren't y'all scoring 5 or 6 or 7 runs?
No. See, you're the pat on the back guy.
No, I'm not the pat on the back guy,
and I'm the kick in the butt guy. And there's two different ways to approach this scenario, and I think with these White Sox, you cannot pat on the back these guys anymore. You've had years to do that. Now it needs to be kick in the butt. Guys, we beat the Astros 3-1, you know what, but we're better than that. This should have been 10-1. So you know what we're going to do today? Get on the mound. Handle business and take the series just like you were saying, so that we can have some sort of life. Because I'm tired of hearing Marshall.
What are you
heard AJ Pierzynski say it yesterday, and you've heard Benintendi say it in like last week. Sox get one win and automatically is like, is this the one that's going to turn things around?
No. The only time I felt like that's this entire season is when they won back to back series. Because that's only happened once all season. So when they did that, I was like, okay, maybe things are starting to turn around. I was never like, is this the one that's going to turn things around? But when they won back-to-back series, it was a couple things. Not just the fact that they won back-to-back series. It's like, look, you got 4 games with the last place team in your division. Just win the series. And at worst, maybe you don't win the series, but you get a split because it's a 4-game series. What happened?
Yeah, that was crap.
They dropped 3 of 4
on
to the
road.
Royals.
Yeah.
To the Royals.
It was a bad stretch run. Lost some bad games. You know, one of them was a one-run game. So, I mean, you know, the last one of the set, you know, that they should have had. But, you know, hey, you bounce back. You beat Houston in a game, you know, with your ace on the mound. And then you get an opportunity to run it back today.
With a guy who's looked pretty good on the mound in recent days.
True.
Lucas Giolito has looked like a dude who can cause problems. So, my thing is this. Just win the series. Yeah. I don't care if it's 1-0. I don't care if it's 12-8. Win the series.
All right, let's go to the phone lines. 312-644-6767 is Gabe Ramirez, Marshall Harris, in for Matt Spiegel on Hit and Run. We're taking your calls, thoughts on the White Sox, also on the Cubs. So if you know if you liked what you've seen over the last couple of days from the Cubs and you have some thoughts, please feel free to chime in as well. Let's go to Owen out in Willowbrook. Owen, so what do you think the issue is with the Chicago White Sox?
Hey, guys. Well, first of all, I think the big issue is people keep saying this team has talent, okay? But talent is not just physical talent. It's mental talent, and they don't have the discipline at the plate to be consistent. This team cannot win 8, 9, 10 games in a row. These guys, the day before, the top 4 guys went 0-for-16. They swing at wild pitches. They just don't have the ability to do it, and fundamentally they aren't good enough. And I put this on the fact that I don't think our general manager knows talent. And I think that they overestimated what they had, and they don't have the ability to stick to fundamentals.
Okay, I'm with that, especially the part about the respecting of the fundamentals. That's one thing I've noticed. Since I got to town, I've been here. This is my 3rd season covering the White Sox, right? They consistently have not been consistent in terms of the way they approach the game, whether that's their plate approach, out in the field. I agree with that 100%. Now, to say they just don't have talent, though, I'm against that because I think Luis Robert Jr. is pretty talented.
Yeah.
I think Andrew Vaughn's got a lot of promise. I think there's Tim Anderson is Tim Anderson. I think they do have...
Are you talented if you are inconsistent with that talent? You know, like, think about any sport, right? Like, if you're an NBA player and you drop 30 one day, but then you drop 8 the next, which happens a lot in the NBA, is that player talented or are they just capable? And I think that's what Owen's leaning on, and I think a lot of people have been questioning that when it comes to the White Sox. Like, you know, Eloy Jimenez can go yard. You know, he can hurt you, you know, but you also know he can hurt you, you know, like defensively, you know, taking some wild swings, maybe not having the best approach at the plate. So, you know, and I think that's the big issue that we as White Sox fans have, you yourself included, where, you know, we look at these guys and we're like, you're so inconsistent. Did we Did we give false hope to the fan base in the city in trying to project the type of talent onto these guys that is not necessarily there?
I think expectations, they haven't met expectations ultimately. And so it's not what you can't.
Who's that on?
It's not what you can't do. It's what you do, right? And they haven't done it. So you say, who's it on? It's on everyone in the organization, because there's guys, front office wise, whose job it is to develop the talent and get them to play. When you see the potential, to get that potential out of them, that's between the coaching staff, the front office, minor league development, how you're brought into an organization and what you're taught before you get to the big leagues oftentimes determines what you do once you get to the big leagues.
He's Marshall Harris. I'm Gabe Ramirez. This is 670 The Score. You said a word right there, gave me goosebumps, by the way, because I think that that's something that people are leaving out of the equation. More often than not, there is a blame placed on the players.
Right.
There is a blame placed on management. But the word you said that no one is talking about is development.
Yeah.
And that right there is the issue, right? When you're saying like, oh, these guys aren't talented enough, or the GM didn't bring in the guy, he overstated, you know, the talent that's there. No, the talent is there, but it's not being developed to the point where they can have consistency. If a guy can score 30 in the NBA and puts up 8 the next, well, it's the coach's job to then get him to a point where he can put up 23 consistently. And that, I love that today. Listen to Rick Hahn talk about where he feels like the blame should be when he gets asked these questions.
Put it on me. That's the job. That's the absolute gig. Put it on me. Put it on me. I'll tell you this. Let's make it real clear. It sure as heck isn't on Pedro and this coaching staff. And they are doing everything in their power to prepare, play, focus on the what's controllable and what's fixable, addressing the problems as they arise, and are really doing everything in their power to get this thing right. So it's absolutely not on the manager or the coaches. Ultimately, it's the players who play the game, and when they don't achieve at the level that we've projected, they certainly bear a level of responsibility for that. But at the end of the day, the people who put the players in on the roster and put them on the field are the ones that bear the responsibility if that group doesn't achieve. That's me. That's fine.
Not once, Marshall, was the word development in there. And that's why I was so excited when you said that, because even Rick Hahn is saying, it's on me. It's on the players, too. Don't blame it on this person. But no one talked about, you know, we get these guys up. We give, you know, Eloy $6 million a year because we think he's the man. But he's still a guy that, you know, in most organizations probably would have spent more time in the minors to develop.
But it's my question is what is happening in the minors? And I don't know. I don't.
Right.
I don't know what's going on in Charlotte. I don't know what's going on in Birmingham and levels below. But I will say this. What you see on a daily basis from the Sox many times is unacceptable. And that's why fans are so just beside themselves, ready to give up on the season, which you can't blame. If you're only winning 33% of your games, you can't blame a fan who says, I'm going to walk away because I just can't bear to watch this anymore.
Yeah,
baseball, even with the new pitch clock, is a time-consuming game. People got other things to do with their time.
Right.
So I can't even blame them if like, oh, and what? Once it gets nice outside?
Yeah.
Once it really gets nice outside?
Yeah.
People are going to have other things to do than watch Sox baseball if the Sox aren't performing. Now, if we get more games like we saw last night, then that's a different story.
And they have likable guys. You know, when looking at the White Sox team, I mean, Luis Robert Jr., without a doubt, is a likable player. Eloy, regardless of what you might say, is likable. You know, you like guys like Jake Berger, Andrew Benintendi. I mean,
Cease, Giolito.
Oh, my gosh. I want to root for guys like Reynaldo Lopez, you know, Liam Hendricks. I mean, these are guys that you want to see perform at an extremely high level, and you want to root for them. But again, like you just mentioned, summertime comes, and if you're not winning, like then I'm going to be like, then I'm not here for this, right? Let's take some more phone calls. 312-644-6767. It's Gabe Ramirez. It's Marshall Harris from CBS2. Right here on 670 The Score. Let's go to Kevin out in Palatine. Kevin, you know, speaking of likable players on the White Sox, Andrew Vaughn is one of them, but he also can make you upset occasionally as well, right?
Yeah, but he is. But here's what you got to remember. You got to remember where he was drafted. He should be having his Chris Bryant year this year. He should be the MVP. This is what we were told. Get Pito out of town, get Abreu out of town, and it opens the door for this superstar, never-before-seen season. That's what was said in the offseason. Here's another guy on this team who is Michael Kopech. All we hear, Chuck Garfine and everyone, this is his year, this is his year. He never goes five innings. Peter Gammon said he was going to win multiple Cy Youngs. Michael Kopech is a guy. He's literally a fourth or fifth starter. Yeah. See, the issue with this town is, and, you know, Parkin said it on the Score the other day, we are such – this is the easiest media town, and everyone who covers the White Sox, with the exception of Josh Nelson, there is no Gordon Wittenmeyer who covers the Sox who actually holds them accountable. And that's why people are allowed to get, you know, Rick Hahn saying, talk to me after the third parade. The third parade, how this guy still has a job is insane. But, guys, we totally overrate. And here's the thing now. Everyone's twisting themselves into pretzels saying, hey, is there a possibility? So, first of all, there is no possibility they're going to win this division. None. The math doesn't add up. But this is not what we were promised. We were promised multiple World Series, and now people want to take out the pom-poms because they won one game last night and that they might somehow, which is – it's never going to happen – win the worst division in the history of pro sports. Like, guys, we need to hold them to a way higher account. This is the seventh year of the rebuild. It failed.
You're right. You're right, Jim.
I got no arguments.
He's making some great points.
And he's making very good points. And what I'll say is, hey, man, at the end of the day, for me personally, it's 162 games, and we got 120 more or so to go. Yeah. So I got to look at the day-to-day just to keep myself sane.
But Jim said it. The math ain't mathing.
No, the math is not mathing.
Oh, Kevin, sorry.
But we knew that from jump. All you could say is, all right, let's figure out who's salvageable on this team.
Yeah.
What can you get for some of these players with expiring contracts this year and next year? And who should be running the show after this year?
I hate being in a situation like that.
What do you mean?
He did bring up Josh Nelson, though, and he will be on our show later on today at 10:40. So if you want to hear from him, make sure you check him out so he can keep the White Sox accountable. But one thing he said that was spot on, and I've mentioned it several times over, is the issue with this town is that we build people up prematurely, and regardless of the sport.
They do that in every town, though. Let me tell you, as a guy.
Chicago does it in a different way, I feel like. But you would know better than I.
But tell me when you say a different way, how do you feel it's different?
I think that we give everyone, like, Michael Jordan, Derrick Rose status.
Whoa. Why are you doing that?
That's my point. That's the issue with the town. Justin Fields, I just was watching like 8 videos yesterday of people saying he sucks and like putting out statistics of all these other things about Justin Fields. And then I go back to my Chicago world and everyone's like Rick Hahn saying, talk to me in 3 parades because everyone's thinking Justin Fields is that dude.
TBD.
Rashawn Johnson, people are like, oh, he's Matt Forte. What are you talking about? Tyler Scott, oh, Adam Thielen in the flesh. Like, this guy's going to be a stud. Darnell Wright, 6 Pro Bowls in a row, starting from the very beginning. Like, people do that in this town immediately.
Gabe. That's what fans do in every city. I'm sorry. Okay. I'm be real with you.
That's what
fans do in every city.
That makes me feel better.
But our job as media members who have these platforms, these microphones in front of us, is to calm all that down.
Okay.
And be like, hey, I see what you want. I don't think that's maybe what you're going to. It's like when you watch a fast food commercial of any kind, how good does that food look in the commercial?
Delicious.
And then when you get that thing in real life,
delicious.
It doesn't look delicious. It does not look delicious.
Right. We got to take a break. We get to talk to Kylie McDaniel, ESPN Baseball Insider, about some of the prospects on both of these teams, the White Sox and the Chicago Cubs, and see who is someone maybe that we don't necessarily have our eye on that can help either of these teams get themselves out of the rut. Who does Kylie think can be that person? We'll find out after the break. It's Gabe Ramirez, Marshall Harris on Hit and Run right here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Mejia, ready and delivers. Swing, ground ball, past the pitcher, in the center field. Bogu gets the wave. Here he comes. Smokies win. The Smokies win. Pete Crow Armstrong has delivered the winner, a 4-3 final. What do you say? Look at him pile on old PCA out there and left. Never quit with these guys.
Hit and Run, Sundays from 9 a.m. till noon.
It's Gabe Ramirez, Marshall Harris from CBS2 hanging out today, filling in for Matt Spiegel. It is Hit and Run. that announcer sounded as excited as Sean Sears when he's like, guys, I'm playing the PCA clip. I'm like, dude, you told me this 8 times already, bro. But did you want to hear it? He's asking you right now. I want to hear it again.
You want to hear it again? I'll skew it up for you, man.
I like PCA.
It's fun, man. He's fun.
Who do you like better, Sean Sears, PCA, or Matt Mervis?
Ooh, I'm a big PCA guy. Matt Mervis is fun, but PCA is my
boy. Matt Mervis is doing it, so I'm going to go with Matt Mervis. See, here's the thing with y'all and your love for prospects. Everybody loves a prospect, right? Because they don't have anything. They haven't done anything yet, so it's easy to be like, they're going to be so great. They're going to be so. And this goes back to my just ability to smash some of these, this talk. Let's wait to see them do something before we call them the next whatever.
Hey, Matt Mervis almost hit a homer yesterday, you know, sitting on second base and then got hyped up. That's what
as he should, as he should.
But you know, when you're like a young or rookie getting called up, you kind of feel subdued in certain moments because you don't want to overstep your bounds. But he was just like, "No, guys, let's do this. I'm ready." He was like, "Ah!" on second base. I love things like that. See, those are the kind of players I like. Show me emotion. You know, do your little dance on second base, like go cooking in the kitchen, or they all got the bow and arrow, like whatever it is.
Whatever your celebration is. People who don't like celebrations. I will never celebrate you. How about that?
Well, we're going to celebrate our next guest because I know he probably is cut from the cloth that does like people that celebrate as well. Joining us right now on the Circuit Resort and Casino Hotline, Circuit Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. He is the ESPN baseball insider hanging out with us right now, Kylie McDaniel. Kylie, favorite celebration that you see across Major League Baseball, what would it be?
I believe it's referred to as the Dong Bong in Baltimore.
Okay. I love that. Is that because I remember when they first debuted it, people were trying to like come up what's the actual name for this. But is that what they landed on? Dong Bong.
It's one of the two. I forgot what the other one was, but I was like, that's clearly the better of the two.
So yeah, Dong Bong. I think it was like the Homer Hose or something like that.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah,
yeah. But Dong Bong has that nice little 2-syllable. Dong Bong roll.
Is really where it's at. That's the best one.
Harkens back to all of our days in college.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, unfortunately, some more days than other. That's neither here nor there, kind of. Let's talk a little bit about. We were just talking about the man, Matt Mervis himself. Have you been satisfied with what you've seen from him so far in these last couple of weeks from being called up?
Yeah, he's in sort of the prospecting world that I've come up in, it's tough to project those kinds of players where you don't have, to use sort of the scouting 2080 scale, 70 power. Like, I don't think it's quite to that level where you're expecting 30, 40 homers. I think he's probably a tier below that. So that means he's really got to hit and needs to be decent defensively. And so, in the small league we've had so far, he hasn't been hitting a ton, but it's also very early. I think he'll probably hit enough. The question for me is he going to be a good enough hitter to get to all the power and be a pretty good starter at first base? Or is he going to have some swing and miss issues, maybe hit like 230, 240, and be more of like a platoon guy that you kind of work into the lineup? Like that's sort of the question for me with Mervis. And obviously he hasn't played quite enough yet to sort of answer that. I think you probably need like a month or two to get an idea of like which way it's trending.
I feel like when we're talking about prospects, we were literally just talking about this. People get so hyped about the prospects. I mean, for me, it's a real forecasting game to try to predict who's going to do well at the major league level, because you can put up numbers in Triple A, and then maybe in the majors it doesn't happen quite at the same level. I'm really conflicted right now watching Christopher Morel, because I saw him put up big numbers in Iowa. I also saw him get off to a great start last year with the Cubs before cooling off on the second half of the season. What is your view on Christopher Morel and his ceiling?
He was another guy that was in that bucket where it was, is this going to be a like sort of corner utility platoon guy that's got some swing and miss issues and then get to the power and is like a nice guy to have? And then once he gets to arbitration, he's making $3-5 million a year. He's hitting 220-230, then, maybe he's non-tender, maybe he's traded. Like, that's sort of like the low-end expectation for that kind of guy. Same goes for Mervis. And then he obviously gets to the big leagues last year and hits a little more than expected, gets there a little quicker than you thought, and then comes up and does stuff again this year. And it's like, okay, it seems like he's going to get to this power enough that it kind of depends on what kind of team he's on. That if he's on a team that is like, like the Padres or the Dodgers or the, Mets or the Braves, where like the team is just stacked with a bunch of dudes making $10, $20 million a year, he might not necessarily be your start. He's a really good guy you work into the lineup. And then for a team that's still got some spots for young players, like he seems like he's got the potential to be a solid everyday guy. And you just got to keep an eye on what that strikeout rate is, how often he's swinging and missing in the zone, how much is he going to chase out of the zone. There's some sort of theories in the scouting world that chasing out of the zone, you can actually teach guys to stop doing at some point. Whereas swinging and missing in the zone tends to be, your swing path is uphill to lift the ball in the air. You can't really fix that as much. So he's one of those guys, again, with Mervis, where you're trying to figure out exactly like what flavor of contact they're going to have. Because just looking at like what their strikeout rate is in AA or AAA and what they've done in like their first, you know, 20, 30 games in the big leagues, that doesn't really tell you, because that can be very misleading in small samples.
We're talking to Kylie McDaniel here on 670 The Score, Gabe Ramirez, Marshall Harris. Make sure you follow him at KylieMCD. You know, when you're talking about Christopher Morel, I mean, you know the power is there. You know he has the ability to play multiple positions. But when you see him play, Kylie, where do you feel like, because you mentioned, you know, having him play every day, you know, where is the position that you see him being the most successful in?
I think third base is his best natural position. I think that sort of fits his skill set, that he's not necessarily like a long speed guy. I think it's like first couple steps. But also, like, I don't think he's like a plus defender there. So for a lot of teams, like, I know we talked about this Bobby Witt Jr. last year, like, he's a really good shortstop, but they had a shortstop they wanted to play there. So now he's a third baseman. He turned into a really good third baseman. And Morel, I think, is one of those guys where he's like, he's probably never going to be an above average to plus defender anywhere. He's a guy that you're fine putting in a couple different locations, and he'll probably be fine. So again, I said sort of like a corner utility guy. I think he kind of can play all four corners if you need him to. I think there's enough athleticism. He can probably play some second or center if you need him to. But I think he kind of fits better on those corner spots.
I'm curious, when you're watching the prospects in general, but specifically for this Cubs team, and the way that they mesh with a team that's got a lot more veterans this year than they did last year. How much of a team building do you have to take into account when you bring up guys that are young, knowing they're not going to maybe get as much playing time? We're talking about, you know, Morel, Mervis, they're fortunate right now because Nico Horner was hurt, that they're getting guys maybe more run than they would be getting normally. I mean, how much of a balance do you think that is, getting guys everyday bats in AAA versus, hey, you come up, you may be just a platoon player or a spot player?
Yeah, I mean, that's the trickiest thing to do, and also I think a sign of a really good organization. I came up working for the Braves. I live in Atlanta now, so I follow them pretty closely. And when I worked there, we called up Dansby Swanson, who was one of the best prospects in baseball, former number one overall pick, and he was like not very good at the plate for a little while. And then obviously like turned it on, got paid. Now he's in Chicago. It's hard to guess how that's going to happen. It's also hard, I think, part of the reason the Cardinals get a lot of plaudits around the league in general, not necessarily right now, for like they just seem to always have a young player to come up that no one really regards very highly that'll come fill in and do a good job. I think there's a lot of sort of institutional preparation for all these guys, whether you're a big time prospect or just a fill in guy that's going to get DFA'd in 3 days when this, you know, the regular guy comes back. Can you get that guy in a position to succeed? Is the clubhouse and the culture and the chemistry such that somebody can walk in there, do a good job, and feel like they're a part of it? Some of that is just sort of lucky roll the dice. Some of it is having the right player, and you never know if you have the right player until you put him in that situation. And I'd say like at least half of that is what the sort of front office coaching staff, the advanced scouts, like all those people do to put people in a position to succeed. And I think a team organization top to bottom that's doing a sloppy job of those things, that teams tend to target them in trade talks because they think they can do a better job developing this player than the team currently is. And so they're undervalued. And you can then, you know, again, working for teams, we had these conversations. Who are the teams you want to target in trades? You want to rope them into a three-way deal because you think they're generally bad at stuff when it comes to player development.
So
like,
true.
Even if a player that they have evaluated correctly, we think we're going to do a better job with them than they will. That's the kind of thing that, you know, from top to bottom, day after day, like a little bit of a shortcoming in that area, it tends to, you know, snowball on itself and then becomes a real problem when those guys aren't ready at the big leagues either.
And you know what, Marshall, it's a great question because it's something that I've pondered as well. It's like, you know, you got this team of, you know, guys that you signed and they're, you know, the clubhouse is already good. And then you're bringing in these guys to replace them and take at bats away. But it seems as though the clubhouse itself is such a good one, right? Like, I think it was Eric Hosmer that was, you know, praising Matt Mervis and like, hey, I understood what was going to happen, you know, when I came here. I didn't know when, but, you know, here it is. And I wish the best for it. So it's like having a space like that, that these guys can come into, says a lot. It says a lot about the organization, says a lot about Dave Ross as a manager. Kylie, but those are the bats. What about pitching, right? I mean, you look at a guy like Hayden Wisniewski, struggled his last outing, wasn't necessarily able to find his spots. And you do got a guy like Kyle Hendricks who's getting closer. But, you know, thoughts on Hayden Wisniewski, and is there another arm in the Cubs system that can kind of come up and have like a Justin Steele type rise to the majors?
Wisniewski, I think, will be fine. He's, I mean, going back to sort of Morel Mervis examples, the question with him is he going to be able to settle in as a third, fourth starter and be a, you know, quality, dependable guy, you know, ERA around four, or is he going to be one of these utility arms where he could be long relief, fifth starter, seventh, eighth inning, can kind of go in different roles? And is that sort of third pitch, the, you know, fastball, breaking ball, is he commanding those enough to really make everything work? Is there going to be a third or fourth option in there to keep guys off of it? That's, you know, just one of those guys got thrown in the deep end and hasn't quite figured it out yet. But I think all the components are there, so I'm confident that he'll be able to figure it out. On the prospect side, there has been some, I'd say, positive movement at the top of the system where I think Jordan Wicks, I had in the middle of my top 100. I think he made a huge step forward last year. He was seen as like a pitchability lefty without big stuff. And then his stuff got better last year, which at age, you know, 23, you never really expect to happen, but it happened. And then behind him, you have Cade Horton, first round pick from last year. He's been doing well so far. He's not an option to really get there this year. Wicks is in double A. He could conceivably get there in the second half. And then behind them, you have DJ Hurz, who's probably in that Wisniewski, like, kind of floats around different sorts of roles or possible big stuff from the left side. And then I also, the guy to keep an eye on would be Daniel Palencia, really big stuff, has a chance to, if you put him in those short relief roles, could be an option this year as well. And then also Ben Brown, who I forgot, another guy. I think all of these guys have been acquired in the last year or two. Huge breaking ball, throws in the mid-90s, has a chance to be a starter as well. So I think over the last couple of years of the, if you want to call it a rebuild, reload, whatever it's been with the Cubs, they've done a good job of building out that pitching depth to have the option to not have to run out a guy that's unqualified. There's enough guys there, they're always going to have a decent option this year.
That's a long laundry list you just gave us.
That sounds like a whole other starting rotation in the minors, right?
And I'm not
well,
mad
need
about it.
A whole other rotation of five of them to hope you're going to get one or two.
Yeah,
yeah, right, that's how that works. And that's it's interesting that we talk about it because I'm going to flip the script now. Same question, but well, basically same question, but I'm looking across town, the South Side. Give me hope for the White Sox future.
Me too, please, because I'm wearing a Sox hoodie and I just need it.
So I have not been a huge fan of the way that they have built a team in general, broadly speaking. Not that, like, I don't think it's not going to work at all. It's just, like, not my flavor in the same way I think a lot of people around baseball question if A.J. Preller would be able to make a winner because he was seen as a guy that could collect a lot of high-end players and prospects and sort of, you know, get a bunch of talent around, make a good farm system, have a nice young core. But could he finish the team off? Could he balance it out? Could he make a top-to-bottom winner? He hasn't quite done it yet, but I think he's been making strides each year, getting a little better at it. The White Sox were building in a similar way. Some of it was through the system, some of it was through free agency. Let's get like six or seven or eight really good players, give them extensions, give them big contracts, and then we'll just kind of figure out the rest of it. And I don't know if you could tell, but when I was referring to an organization, the top-to-bottom isn't necessarily run the best.
Or oh, yeah, we knew what you meant. We knew exactly what you were alluding to. You didn't have to code switch for us. We understood exactly what was going on.
If the efficiency of the organization of, you know, the six or eight different departments that matter, if you're average at best in all of these, and I'd say, you know, bottom five, bottom 10, some of them, you're not going to figure out how to fill out the rest of the roster on a cheap budget the way that, like, say, Milwaukee will always have two or three guys on minor league deals that nobody wanted turning into a two or three war player, and they're just always finding these guys. It's not just like randomly they're looking under a rock and they get lucky every year. They have a process for selecting these guys, developing them, even when they're like, you know, Hernan Perez, guys like this that are just like 27-year-old journeyman utility infielders. They put up a three-war season with Milwaukee. It's like, it's not a coincidence. Like, it's the teams that tend to be good at making the most out of these players. And because I don't think the White Sox are the best at that. Now, they're not terrible. They're not clueless. They're not all these things. But like in 30 teams and like a fistfight every day, who's going to do a best job? They tend to be 15th to 20th in a lot of these categories. So when you need to figure out how to fill up that roster, make sure those top six or eight players stay healthy and stay performing, I'm not super confident they're going to beat a bunch of other teams at that. And so if you're not beating them, then you have to then go, you know, sign those guys as free agents. Like, there's ways to do it. And I just don't feel like they had the resources once they dedicated all those resources to the top of the roster to do it at the bottom of the roster. And so over a long season, when the bottom of the roster gets a little iffy, the system's been bottom 10 for a while, and like the drafts international have been like good, not great. And then Colas is like sort of a hope. He comes up, not quite ready yet. You got to send him back down. It's like, I just don't think there's enough like bullets in the chamber there to really do what needs to be done. And then a lot of those core players at the top of the roster are also not performing. So now it just looks even worse than I thought.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
On Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Mejia, ready and delivers. Swing, ground ball, past the pitcher, in the center field. Wogu gets the wave. Here he comes. Smokies win. The Smokies win. Pete Crow Armstrong has delivered the winner. A 4-3 final. What do you say? Look at him pile on old PCA out there and left. Never quit with these guys.
Hit and Run Sundays from 9 a.m. till noon.
It's Gabe Ramirez, Marshall Harris from CBS 2 hanging out today, filling in for Matt Spiegel. It is Hit and Run. That announcer sounded as excited as Sean Sears when he's like, guys, I'm playing the PCA clip. I'm like, dude, you told me this 8 times already, bro. But did you want to hear it? He's asking you right now, I want to hear it again.
You want to hear it again? I was queued up for you, man.
I like PCA.
It's fun, man. He's fun.
Who do you like better, Sean Sears, PCA or Matt Mervis?
Ooh, I'm a big PCA guy. Matt Mervis is fun, but PCA is my boy.
Matt Mervis is doing it, so I'm going to go with Matt Mervis. See, here's the thing with y'all and your love for prospects. Everybody loves a prospect, right? Because they don't have anything. They haven't done anything yet, so it's easy to be like, they're going to be so great. They're going to be so – and this goes back to my just ability to smash some of these, this talk. Let's wait to see them do something before – we call them the next whatever.
Hey, Matt Mervis almost hit a homer yesterday, you know, sitting on second base and then got hyped up. That's what
as
I like.
As he should.
But, you know, when you're like a young or, rookie getting called up, you kind of feel subdued in certain moments because you don't want to overstep your mind. But he was just like, no, guys, let's do this. I'm ready. He was like, on second base. I love things like that. See, those are the kind of players I like. Show me emotion. You know, do your little dance on second base, like go cooking in the kitchen or, they all got the bow and arrow, like whatever it is.
Whatever your celebration is. People who don't like celebrations, I will never celebrate you. How about that?
Well, we're going to celebrate our next guest because I know he probably is cut from the cloth that does like people that celebrate as well. Joining us right now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. He is the ESPN baseball insider and hanging out with us right now, Kylie McDaniel. Kylie, favorite celebration that you see across Major League Baseball, what would it be?
I believe it's referred to as the Dong Bong in Baltimore.
Okay. I love that. Is that because I remember when they first debuted it, people were trying to like come up what's the actual name for this, but is that what they landed on, Dong Bong?
It's one of the two. I forgot what the other one was, but I was like, that's clearly the better of the two. So
yeah, Dong Bong. I think it was like the Homer Hose or something like that.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Dong Bong has that nice little two-syllable
Dong
Bong roll.
Is really where it's at. That's the best one.
Harkens back to all of our days in college.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, unfortunately, some more days than other. That's neither here nor there, kind of. Let's talk a little bit about, we were just talking about the man, Matt Mervis himself. Have you been satisfied with what you've seen from him so far in these last couple of weeks from being called up?
Yeah, in sort of the prospecting world that I've come up in, it's tough to project those kinds of players where you don't have, to use sort of the scouting 2080 scale, 70 power. I don't think it's quite to that level where you're expecting 30, 40 homers. I think he's probably a tier below that. So that means he's really got a hit and needs to be decent defensively. And so, in the small league we've had so far, he hasn't been hitting a ton, but it's also very early. I think he'll probably hit enough. The question for me is he going to be a good enough hitter to get to all the power and be a pretty good starter at first base? Or is he going to have some swing and miss issues, maybe hit like 230, 240 and be more of like a platoon guy that you kind of work into the lineup? Like that's sort of the question for me with Mervis. And obviously he hasn't played quite enough yet to sort of answer that. I think you probably need like a month or two to get an idea of like which way it's trending.
I feel like when we're talking about prospects, we were literally just talking about this. People get so hyped about the prospects. I mean, it for me, it's a real forecasting game to try to predict who's going to do well at the major league level, because you can put up numbers in AAA, and then maybe in the majors it doesn't happen quite at the same level. I'm really conflicted right now watching Christopher Morel because I saw him put up big numbers in Iowa. I also saw him get off to a great start last year with the Cubs before cooling off on the second half of the season. What is your view on Christopher Morel and his ceiling?
He was another guy that was in that bucket where it was, is this going to be a like sort of corner utility platoon guy that's got some swing and miss issues and then gets to the power and is like a nice guy to have. And then once he gets to arbitration, he's making $3-5 million a year. He's hitting 220-230, then, you know, maybe he's non-tender, maybe he's traded. Like, that's sort of like the low-end expectation for that kind of guy. Same goes for Mervis. And then he obviously gets to the big leagues last year and hits a little more than expected, gets there a little quicker than you thought, and then comes up and does stuff again this year. And it's like, okay, it seems like he's going to get to this power enough that it kind of depends on what kind of team he's on. That if he's on a team that is like, you know, like the Padres or the Dodgers or the, you know, Mets or the Braves, where like the team is just stacked with a bunch of dudes making $10, $20 million a year, he might not necessarily be your starter. He's a really good guy you work into the lineup. And then for a team that's still got some spots for some young players, like he seems like he's got the potential to be a solid everyday guy. And you just got to keep an eye on what that strikeout rate is, how often he's swinging and missing in the zone, how much is he going to chase out of the zone. There's some sort of theories in the scouting world that chasing out of the zone, you can actually teach guys to stop doing at some point. Where swinging and missing in the zone tends to be, oh, your swing path is uphill to lift the ball in the air. You can't really fix that as much. So he's one of those guys, again, with Mervis, where you're trying to figure out exactly like what flavor of contact they're going to have. Because just looking at like what their strikeout rate is in AA or AAA and what they've done in like their first, you know, 20, 30 games in the big leagues, that doesn't really tell you because that can be very misleading in small samples.
We're talking to Kylie McDaniel here on 670 The Score, Gabe Ramirez, Marshall Harris. Make sure you follow him at KylieMCD. You know, when you're talking about Christopher Morel, I mean, you know the power is there. You know he has the ability to play multiple positions. But when you see him play, Kylie, where do you feel like, because you mentioned, you know, having him play every day, you know, where is the position that you see him being the most successful in?
I think third base is his best natural position. I think that sort of fits his skill set that he's not necessarily like a long speed guy. I think it's like first couple steps. But also, like, I don't think he's like a plus defender there. So for a lot of teams, like I know we talked about this Bobby Witt Jr. last year, like he's a really good shortstop, but they had a shortstop they wanted to play there. So now he's a third baseman. He turned into a really good third baseman. And Morel, I think, is one of those guys where he's like, he's probably never going to be an above average to plus defender anywhere. He's a guy that you're fine putting in a couple different locations and he'll probably be fine. So again, I said sort of like a corner utility guy. I think he kind of can play all four corners if you need him to. I think there's enough athleticism. You can probably play some second or center if you need him to. But I think he kind of fits better on those corner spots.
I'm curious when you're watching the prospects in general, but specifically for this Cubs team and the way that they mesh with a team that's got a lot more veterans this year than they did last year. How much of a team building do you have to take into account when you bring up guys that are young, knowing they're not going to maybe get as much playing time? We're talking about, you know, Morel, Mervis, fortunate right now because Nico Hoerner was hurt, that they're getting guys maybe more run than they would be getting normally. I mean, how much of a balance do you think that is, getting guys everyday bats in AAA versus, hey, you come up, you may be just a platoon player or a spot player?
Yeah, I mean, that's the trickiest thing to do, and also I think a sign of a really good organization. I came up working for the Braves. I live in Atlanta now, so I follow them pretty closely. And when I worked there, we called up Dansby Swanson, who was one of the best prospects in baseball, former number one overall pick. And he was, like, not very good at the plate for a little while. And then obviously, like, turned it on, got paid. Now he's in Chicago. It's hard to guess how that's going to happen. It's also hard, I think, part of the reason the Cardinals get a lot of plaudits around the league in general, not necessarily right now, for like they just seem to always have a young player to come up that no one really regards very highly that'll come fill in and do a good job. I think there's a lot of sort of institutional preparation for all these guys, whether you're a big time prospect or just a fill in guy that's going to get DFA'd in 3 days when this, you know, the regular guy comes back. Can you get that guy in a position to succeed? Is the clubhouse and the culture and the chemistry such that somebody can walk in there, do a good job, and feel like they're a part of it? Some of that is just sort of lucky roll the dice. Some of it is having the right player, and you never know if you have the right player until you put him in that situation. And I'd say like at least half of that is what the sort of front office coaching staff, the advanced scouts, like all those people do to put people in a position to succeed. And I think a team organization top to bottom that's doing a sloppy job of those things, that teams tend to target them in trade talks because they think they can do a better job developing this player than the team currently is. And so they're undervalued. And you can then, you know, again, working for teams, we had these conversations. Who are the teams you want to target in trades? You want to rope them into a three-way deal because you think they're generally bad at stuff when it comes to player development.
So
like,
true.
Even if a player that they have evaluated correctly we think we're going to do a better job with him than they will. That's the kind of thing that, you know, from top to bottom, day after day, a little bit of a shortcoming in that area, it tends to, you know, snowball on itself and then becomes a real problem when those guys aren't ready at the big leagues either.
And you know what, Marshall, it's a great question because it's something that I've pondered as well. It's like, you know, you got this team of, you know, guys that you signed and they're you know, the clubhouse is already good. And then you're bringing in these guys to replace them and take at bats away. But it seems as though the clubhouse itself is such a good one, right? Like, I think it was Eric Hosmer that was, you know, praising Matt Mervis and like, hey, I understood what was going to happen, you know, when I came here. I didn't know when, but, you know, here it is, and I wish the best for it. So it's like having a space like that that these guys can come into says a lot. It says a lot about the organization, says a lot about Dave Ross as a manager. Kylie, but those are the bats. What about pitching, right? I mean, you look at a guy like Hayden Wisniewski, struggled his last outing, wasn't necessarily able to find his spots. And you do got a guy like Kyle Hendricks who's getting closer. But, you know, thoughts on Hayden Wisniewski? And is there another arm in the Cubs system that can kind of come up and have like a Justin Steele type rise to the majors?
Wisniewski, I think, will be fine. He's, I mean, going back to sort of Morel Mervis examples, the question with him is he going to be able to settle in as a third, fourth starter and be a, you know, quality, dependable guy, you know, ERA around four, or is he going to be one of these utility arms where he could be long relief, fifth starter, seventh, eighth inning, can kind of go in different roles, and is that sort of third pitch, the, you know, fastball, breaking ball, is he commanding those enough to really make everything work? Is there going to be a third or fourth option in there to keep guys off of it? That's, you know, just one of those guys got thrown in the deep end and hasn't quite figured it out yet, but I think all the components are there, so I'm confident that he'll be able to figure it out. On the prospect side, there has been some, I'd say, positive movement at the top of the system where I think Jordan Wicks, I had in the middle of my top 100. I think he made a huge step forward last year. He was seen as like a pitchability lefty without big stuff. And then his stuff got better last year, which at age, you know, 23, you never really expect to happen, but it happened. And then behind him, you have Cade Horton, first round pick from last year. He's been doing well so far. He's not an option to really get there this year. Wicks is in double A. He could conceivably get there in the second half. And then behind them, you have DJ Hurst, who's probably in that Wisniewski, like, kind of floats around different sorts of roles or possible big stuff from the left side. And then I also, the guy to keep an eye on would be Daniel Palencia, really big stuff, has a chance to, if you put him in those short relief roles, could be an option this year as well. And then also Ben Brown, who I forgot, another guy. I think all of these guys have been acquired in the last year or two. Huge breaking ball, throws in the mid-90s, has a chance to be a starter as well. So I think over the last couple of years of the, if you want to call it a rebuild, reload, whatever it's been with the Cubs, they've done a good job of building out that pitching depth to have the option to not have to run out a guy that's unqualified. There's enough guys there, they're always going to have a decent option this year.
That's a long laundry list you just gave us.
That sounds like a whole other starting rotation in the minors, right?
And I'm not mad
need
about it.
A whole other rotation of five of them to hope you're going to get one or two.
Yeah,
yeah,
right, that, right, that's
yeah,
how that works.
And that's it's interesting that we talk about it because I'm going to flip the script now. Same question, but well, basically same question, but I'm looking across town, the South Side. Give me hope for the White Sox future.
Me too, please, because I'm wearing a Sox hoodie and I just need it.
So I have not been a huge fan of the way that they have built a team in general, broadly speaking. Not that, like, I don't think it's not going to work at all. It's just, like, not my flavor in the same way I think a lot of people around baseball question if A.J. Preller would be able to make a winner because he was seen as a guy that could collect a lot of high-end players and prospects and sort of, you know, get a bunch of talent around, make a good farm system, have a nice young core. But could he finish the team off? Could he balance it out? Could he make a top-to-bottom winner? He hasn't quite done it yet, but I think he's been making strides each year, getting a little better at it. The White Sox were building in a similar way. Some of it was through the system, some of it was through free agency. Let's get like six or seven or eight really good players, give them extensions, give them big contracts, and then we'll just kind of figure out the rest of it. And I don't know if you could tell, but when I was referring to an organization, the top-to-bottom isn't necessarily run the best.
Or oh, yeah, we knew what you meant. We knew exactly what you were alluding to. You didn't have to code switch for us. We understood exactly what was going on.
If the efficiency of the organization of, you know, the six or eight different departments that matter, if you're average at best in all of these, and I'd say, you know, bottom five, bottom 10, some of them, you're not going to figure out how to fill out the rest of the roster on a cheap budget the way that, like, say, Milwaukee will always have two or three guys on minor league deals that nobody wanted turning into a two or three war player. And they're just always finding the guys. It's not just like randomly they're looking under a rock and they get lucky every year. They have a process for selecting these guys, developing them, even when they're like, you know, Hernan Perez, guys like this that are just like 27-year-old journeyman utility infielders. They put up a three-war season with Milwaukee. It's like, it's not a coincidence. Like, it's the teams that tend to be good at making the most out of these players. And because I don't think the White Sox are the best at that. Now, they're not terrible. They're not clueless. They're not all these things. But, like, in 30 teams and, like, a fistfight every day, who's going to do a best job, they tend to be 15th to 20th in a lot of these categories. So when you need to figure out how to fill up that roster, make sure those top six or eight players stay healthy and stay performing, I'm not super confident they're going to beat a bunch of other teams at that. And so if you're not beating them, then you have to then go, you know, sign those guys as free agents. Like, there's ways to do it, and I just don't feel like they had the resources once they dedicated all those resources to the top of the roster to do it at the bottom of the roster. And so over a long season, when the bottom of the roster gets a little iffy and the system's been bottom 10 for a while, and, like, the drafts in international have been, like, good, not great, and then Colas is, like, sort of a hope. He comes up, not quite ready yet. You got to send him back down. It's like, I just don't think there's enough, like, bullets in the chamber there to really do what needs to be done. And then a lot of those core players at the top of the roster are also not performing. So now it just looks even worse than I thought it could be, where it's just like, well, everyone's kind of underperforming right now. So you asked for hope, and I guess I could try to answer that question again, but that's sort of the
please. No, you're good.
Please. You are my inner dark thoughts right now, Kylie, is what you really are as a Sox fan. You're just saying everything.
He sounds
I'm
like
fearful
a Sox
of.
Fan.
Yeah, a realist. That's exactly what I'm hearing. Before we let you go, Kylie, you mentioned his name, and I am curious your thoughts on Oscar Colas. I was like, is he a guy? Because it seemed going into the season that the White Sox were content putting him in right field simply because it was the best of the options that were out there for them, as opposed to them having, you know, pure confidence in the guy to be a high-level Major League Baseball player. Which of the two situations is it in your mind?
He's a guy on that spectrum of if he really stays on top of the sort of body maintenance and the size and the flexibility and things like that, then he can play the outfield. If he doesn't, he's going to get bigger and be more of a first base DH and probably comes with more power. So it's really just like, what sort of player is he going to be? The problem is with Andrew Vaughn and Eloy Jimenez, it's like that's not exactly the kind of player you're looking for. Like, you'd love a speedy up the middle guy with some power. Like, Byron Buxton would be great to have right now. Yeah. And then the issue with Colas, which I sort of mentioned when I didn't put him in my top 100, I think he was, you know, that 150 to 180 area on my prospect rankings in the winter. My concern was when you look at the data and then sort of watch him for a handful of the bats, you're like, all right, the raw power's there. It's always been there. The ability for bat to ball is there. That's always been there. The issue for me was he was chasing too much out of the zone, and that swing and miss inside the zone was also a problem. And so I thought if we're seeing those, like, he's performing in double A and triple A because I think he's, you know, older and more talented than the pitchers he's facing. But when he's facing 95 on the black and a plus slider from everybody, is his pitch selection going to be such that those tools can come out? And that was sort of the thing that wasn't quite ready yet. And that's still the kind of player he is. And I mentioned earlier that, like, Chase is generally seen, you know, swinging pitches out of the zone is seen as a thing that you can teach. And because he went so long, despite his age, not playing, there were like 2 or 3 years there where he didn't play a game. I think of it, the not chasing pitches out of the zone as sort of like wet cement. Like, he hasn't been playing a game every day for 3 years to where that is dry. So I think that can still be tweaked and improved. I think he can still be an everyday player, but that is the issue he has to work on. And a lot of times guys that are as talented as him, we've seen this with like Acuna and some of these guys that get held down a little bit artificially in the minors. If they're so physically talented, it's hard to improve, because they don't have to change anything to succeed. And if you're succeeding, why would you change anything? So he's now in that weird sort of nether region where, like, how does he go to a level where he's challenged enough that he will both succeed and try to improve and then come up and be a slightly different guy for the better? He's got to solve that issue. And guys have solved this issue before, but, like, that's where he is. And that's kind of tricky to solve.
Yeah, and if the Sox continue on this path, he's going to get a lot of opportunity to fix that whole thing in the latter half of the season. Kylie, I appreciate you hanging out with us, man. Some fantastic stuff right there.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Kylie McDaniel, ESPN Baseball Insider, hanging out with us here on 670 The Score. Make sure you follow him on Twitter, at KylieMCD. Listen, you're a realist.
Yeah.
But that right there was like, he just like cocked back and slapped me in the face.
Good.
Just with
good.
Some, you
need,
you know,
that. I don't want to be, I'm not a proponent of violence. So if somebody else can do it, that's fine. I'm not going to be the one.
It's just, the thing is, we all know that this is the reality. And we're all just hopeful the same way that Rick Hahn, Kenny Williams, and the likes are. We just want these guys to be talented in the present, but it's a process. And so you don't feel like you have enough space to allow for that, because you put yourself in a position as a team to win now with who you have. And he said it best. You sign these guys, you have six, seven, eight that you feel like should be contributing at a high level in the present. But if they're hurt, if they can't, then you don't have anything in the back.
The margins look real rough right now.
Yeah, most certainly. All right, we're going to continue with our chat about some baseball. We get an opportunity to talk little bit more White Sox, a little bit more Cubs, and then go back to taking your calls, man. I know we talked about a lot of stuff. If you have any thoughts, we're here for you. It's a beautiful Mother's Day in the city of Chicago. You guys are on the road. You have some thoughts, 312-644-6767. We'll take your calls after the break. It's Gabe Ramirez, Marshall Harris, right here on 670 The Score.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.